Steve and Jill here.
Hi.
Welcome to the Land Investor Show, entertaining land investment talk. I'm Stephen Jack Butella.
And I am Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from sunny Southern California.
Today, Jill and I talk about the power of data in real estate investment. Surprise, surprise. We're going to talk about data. How can you guys, this is a question
we talk about data all the time.
How can you guys possibly have 700 shows about land?
Right?
It's got to be the most investment, most depressing, awful, monotone, Ferris Bueller type discussion there ever was.
No way.
How do you keep it fresh?
I love data.
Well, any of you who have been in a relationship for longer than 10 years, you know the tricks. Got to keep
it fresh.
There's
tricks.
You either just accept the fact that you're going to be... Remember, Jill and I have a really close friend, and he just disclosed this, and he does not listen to the show. He said, I just accepted the fact that I'm going to be unhappy.
Yeah, that was
really
sad.
Both of us just gasped, just like Jill did.
Really sad. I'm like, wait, like he's making some changes in his life right now and remarried. And I would think it'd be the most exciting, happiest time in his,
right.
in your life. And I was asking about that, and it was the exact opposite.
I have the exact opposite sentiment about data in real estate and why it just keeps getting better and better and better. We live in a perfect time.
Isn't it?
To
great.
Buy real estate. Using data, because the quality of data gets better and better.
Hold on, part of me is ticked off that there's so many people in the real estate community that are not using data and don't understand data. Number one, and I'm like, you guys are ding dongs. Why is this so hard? And then number two is, you know what? That's great.
Good.
I'm happy that they're spending 20 hours a week going door to door,
placing bandit signs,
handing out business cards and showing up at little meetings. I'm like, you know what? Actually, that's great, because then I'm going to get there faster. So
today is this week is data week. It's all about data. All five shows. This is obviously the first one, but in a minute here, we're going to tell a story about we just bought a house and sold it for $25,000 more. Didn't even sweep the floor.
Exactly.
And 3 days later, the person who's cleaning it up put a dumpster out in front, and we got a call from somebody down the street, three doors down, who got a letter because we're on the same mailer, and said, wait a minute, did you guys buy that house? And this is all, I'm going to let Jill tell the story in a few minutes here.
Okay.
Before we get into it, let's take a question posted by one of our members on the landinvestors.com online community. It's free.
Okay. Mike asks, I have a seller that is looking to unload over 100 parcels in a southern Arizona county. These are lots part of the infamous
Horizon Corp.
Okay.
That's okay.
All right. Subdivisions of
I'll tell everybody about Horizon.
Okay. Subdivisions of the early 60s. I'm concerned ultimately about marketability. I understand that if I buy at the right price, then I shouldn't have a problem. That said, there's a huge supply in the market, which makes me feel like these things would sit regardless of the price. My gut tells me to stay away, but I want to see if any have had experience with these lots. Thanks in advance, Mike. Yeah, you want to answer first?
So Horizon is a company in the 60s before there were subdivision regulations out west that just went in and bought 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 acres in any given market for next to nothing and subdivided them into quarter acre lots without any regulations at all. They didn't put roads in. Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. And they did several of these subdivisions and ultimately raised enough money to do some good with it. They developed Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And so if you've ever been to Fountain Hills, I mean, people go there from all over the world to play golf. And
there's a huge casino there now.
There's casinos. It's right on the edge of
it's actually pretty. Beeline Highway.
Yeah.
Motorcycle rides. Not that we've done that, but we have. That's
we
cool.
We should do that and still do that.
Yeah.
Although we increasingly have more reasons not to die, you and I.
That's funny.
If your gut tells you not to do a deal, never do a deal. I hate
right.
to be Captain Obvious here. I know the exact subdivision that you're talking about, and there are many, many members in our group who love to buy properties for $100 each in a large volume like this, package them all up. It's really easy to do one or two or three versions of HTML instead of 100 and sell them for $400 or $500 each everywhere on the internet. They go really fast. And, you know, you don't need a calculator for that. it can pretty easily clear $300,000-$500,000 on a deal like that. Jill and I have done it many times. That's not what we do now. But if you're cutting your teeth and you really want to get used to this, that's not such a bad way to go. Mm-hmm. Just make sure that you represent the properties for exactly what they are. You may need four-wheel drive to get there. The roads may or may not be there. All that stuff. So it's not so bad as a business model. And I'll tell you what it does. It drives a lot of traffic because you've got 100 properties sitting out there in different places all over the internet. And then you roll in a few large acreage properties and some infill lots, maybe even some houses. You're driving a ton of traffic to your website. And then people they get to know you.
Right. The other thing to point out is if this person has that many, I want to make, first of all, what else do they have? Can you buy more from them in different areas too and do a whole big package deal? And then if they aren't really moving, I mean, that's stuff you could point out to the seller to negotiate a really good price.
Yeah.
I'm sure the person knows that. That's the whole point here. If there wasn't a lot of demand, they might be selling them on their own, but they're not, or they're not into it, whatever it is. So
what's your take on this? It doesn't fit with me. It doesn't, my gut says don't do this deal, even though my head says yes.
I mean, seriously?
Yeah. What's your take on that?
Your gut should oversee your
head.
That's
what I think.
But having said that, you still, if the numbers, there's times that I go, you know, I'm going to push through anyway and it works out fine. But usually,
yeah, right. That's right.
But it's got to have 6 redeeming qualities. I don't know if that's the right term, but there's got to be a lot of other factors that I look at. So, but the bigger point for me in this whole question is not about who they are, not about how you're going to package it up or anything like that. There's a lot of them sitting there. That's one of the things that I don't like.
I know you don't.
When I have a seller reaching out to me, I want to see, when there's like one or two similar properties out there available, then I'm like, oh, this is awesome. There's not a lot. And it's funny, I remember like there's some counties you and I found like in Utah, they're like, there's nothing. So I get excited when I find some of those properties.
Yeah, when there's no for sale property in a county that you're buying property in, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good.
Exactly. Some people go, oh no, I don't have any comps. I'm like, great, you can set your own.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
That's really right, Joe.
And there's nobody else to compete with. This is great. You're the only one.
Diversification is really key here. I mean, diversification as a universal concept is almost always good. You know, I've always said it'd be great if we could do an acquisition and buy one property in 50 states from one seller. How cool would that be?
Exactly.
I mean, you could sell those in probably 2 weeks' time and really, really do well.
Exactly.
Attract like how many different types of audiences.
Right.
So yeah, oh, you're changing my mind now.
Well, you know, we've
Mike,
talked about this because, you know, Jack, you and I talked about this at one time. I started to go down that path. That's where I created our deal board for our members with a lot of properties. Like we could put together like a 5-pack or a 10-pack or something.
Yep.
That's something that we could do too. So another project. We'll get to that.
Packages, huh?
Exactly.
I hate it.
No, you don't.
I strive for buying lots of APNs to separate it for dock prep fees and all of that.
No, but what you just said, though, for him was, never mind.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes the law makes you package.
Well, that too.
We've done that too. Today's topic, the power of data in real estate investment. This is the meat of the show. I can't understate this concept enough. Data, as the collection of data and everything that surrounds data, in 2018 here, we're in early 2018, and for the last 5, maybe 8 years, is imperative, and it's growing by leaps and bounds. As we are recording this, Mark Zuckerberg is going in front of a Senate committee, and he's on the hot seat for collecting people's data, and how powerful it is, and how it's going to get used, and how unregulated it is. So we're truly in maybe the first or second inning of the data ballgame, so why not jump on that wave, so to speak, and use it to buy and sell real estate and be in the massive minority of people that really get it and understand it. Jill takes calls from people and her staff all day that are they say something like this: God, I'm tired of bandit signs. I'm tired of cold calling people to see if they want to sell their property. How do you guys do this? It actually makes a lot of sense. So this is Data Week, as I mentioned earlier. And the topic of this show specifically is just the big picture concept of how we use it,
mm-hmm.
why we believe, you know, while lots of stuff's going to change, the actual fact in the data collection process for somebody who owns a piece of real estate and how they're showing the signs of why they may want to sell it or buy it, is really, really powerful. In short, and this is the takeaway from the show, it removes the risk and replaces it with serious predictability about whether or not you're going to buy a piece of real estate and sell it for more. It removes the risk.
Mm-hmm.
Why take risk?
I agree. It's not much to add. I'm just sitting here going, it should be so easy for everyone to grasp this concept.
Before the show, Jill's like, duh. And that's because we've been doing it for 10 years, Jill and I together. I've been doing it for a lot of years before that. So we'll explain it. So Jill, I know you took some notes before the show and you kind of broke it down in a regular real estate transaction and how you use data in the beginning, middle, and end, you said?
Mm-hmm. I was really kind of thinking about this, and I know we're going to get into it more in shows this week, but when I read this title, I was thinking, all right, how do I use data in the beginning, how I use it in the middle, and how I use it at the end of every transaction? Early on, we use data. We pull like assessor data. This is more you, but I know what goes into it. Comps, days on market, what's available.
So I'll give you the overview about what's available. I hate to interrupt you, but I did anyway, I guess.
You're fine.
There's three major data providers in the country. RealQuest Pro, Title Pro 24/7, and DataTree, which is First American Title's data arm. All three, we are licensed providers for all three. This is not a commercial, but we are licensed providers for all three. And when you sign up with Land Academy or House Academy and eventually Mobile Academy, you get all three. And that's the huge, eventually, that's the huge benefit to signing up with us, among many, many other things about education in the group. But if you walked in and tried to get that data yourself, it would cost three times that much. So and what is that data? What's a data set look like in any given one of these companies? Well, they have all the information that the assessor has for every single piece of property in the country. Land, houses, apartment buildings, skyscrapers, every single one. In DataTree's case, they have 100% coverage. So bear in mind that the downside is the data is only as good as the county data is collected, but I'll tell you, I have not been stumped yet in collecting the data that I need to send out a mailer, a very sophisticated mailer. So that is what we start with, those data sets. We don't use lists anymore. We don't use list source. Mm-hmm. We don't mine for, oh, geez, what's some of the stuff we've heard lately, Jill? We don't look in divorce court. We don't set foreclosures. We don't look at back tax property.
Like out of state. Owners, all of that. All of
vacant
that.
Property schemes.
All that.
Just send everybody that doesn't have a mortgage.
In foreclosures or anything like
whether
that.
Whether it's houses or land, an offer.
Well, let me back up. That's one of the things that I wanted to, so that's what I'm trying to say. Early on, we use it to save money and target the right buyers with all of that information. One of the key things that I don't think people understand, which is so crucial in what we do, is that we also can see who has a mortgage and where the mortgage is and all of that information. That is so huge. The last thing you want to do is be wasting your money and your time sending offers out to someone, you know, who just bought their house, and it's maybe they're upside down, you know, if you're doing a house, and you know, that's just so powerful.
Same thing with land.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Most of those don't have a mortgage if they're vacant land, because they can't, it's hard to, you can't get, usually get loans on that, but that proves my point. So that's the early on data. In the middle, I use the data for my due diligence. So now, you know, we've done our offers, they went out, the person gets their offer, they're calling back. I'm still going right back to the same data set, double checking my numbers. I'm double checking the ownership. I'm double checking the taxes. I'm looking at the offer, making sure it's still a good valid offer price. I'm looking at what I think I could sell it for and using data for that. So that's where I use data in the middle. And then you want me to keep going?
Yeah, so in a real-world example, we send an offer out to a zip code or a county for a certain data set of property, like everybody who, in land's case, in the case of land, everybody who owns a five-acre property in XYZ County, and we send out an offer for $4,000, let's say, because we think, based on our research, we can sell them for 8 or 10. I'm oversimplifying, but, mm-hmm. And they call us, a very predictable and consistent number, call us back, and at that point we check ourselves, we check our numbers, we check to see if the property's actually not on a sloping hill and completely unusable for our purposes. That's what Jill's referring to. We use our own data to check to see if it actually is what we thought it was. And a very predictable number are, they pass our test. Go ahead.
You know, I just thought of one other little component of the data that we have and what we use, which is parcel fact. I mean, that's a huge thing right there. We have collected data with all the GPS coordinates.
Corner point GPS coordinates.
I mean, if it could have 19 points on this property, we have it. And that's one of the things I do too, especially when you don't have an address on some of our properties, good luck finding it. It's very, very, very hard.
Right.
And now we have that, and it's awesome. So that's another thing that we use the data for in the middle, and then why it's so powerful.
Yeah, we've made, Jill and I own the company Parcel Fact, FACT, and it, for the years and years and years, it was nearly impossible to take an APN or a Cecil's parcel number and find the damn property.
Right.
You know, we're all used to typing in an address. Mm-hmm. We type it in Google, bang. Oh my gosh, there's my house.
Yep, doesn't work
at all. It looks old. That stuff's not in the backyard anymore, that kind of thing. Well, with the vast majority of property in the country, you only have an assessor's parcel number because there's nobody lives there, so the post office has not assigned it a physical address. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to find. So Jill and I developed a product that it's fully functional and operational now. You just type in an APN. And it gives you the corner points.
Thing.
And it's, man, it just takes like...
That's so
takes
powerful.
It takes due diligence. I was thinking about it yesterday. I was actually talking to somebody. I'm like, because the site was down for a while, mm-hmm. not a long time, like an hour. And the emails are pouring in like, I don't know what to do with myself.
Right.
I can't find,
it's
I can't,
so
I
powerful.
Cannot complete my world.
One of our resources, and just to give you an idea how powerful this is, like through Title Pro, we can get the center point. I remember being excited for that one just when we got the center point GPS. I thought that was good. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't tell you, what if it's 20 acres? And you don't know how it's facing. It's not always a square, everyone. You can't always just count out, you know, X yeah. amount from the middle. No, that doesn't work.
I bought a property one time that was on a ridge just like that, and 80-90% of it was actually in the ridge, and you could never tell with a pin,
right.
unless you pull a plat map. And plat maps are all, saying the word plat map is kind of like saying landline. It's just kind of over. People still use them. People like my age still use them, actually, but
right.
with GPS and GIS, you don't, it's over.
Exactly. So then at the end, you know, where does data come in? Gosh, for marketing, to find buyers. Where, again, I go back to the same data. I can see who are the neighbors of this property I'm going to buy. I can market to them. Who are the heavy hitter owners of a lot of properties or similar properties in the area? I can market to them.
Right. So the real world version of what Jill just said is you send all these mailers out in a given county for all the 5-acre properties. A predictable number call you back, and congratulations, you buy a few. You buy a handful of them. Well, who the heck's going to buy them from you? Well, no, there's no more likely candidate to buy property from you than another landowner in the immediate area, potentially even one that owns an LLC, and put all their property in there because they're serious about it. Mm-hmm. It's too easy to send them a little letter or drop them a note. It's too simple to say, hey, by the way, I purchased a property within a mile of the property that you own over there, and I'm pretty sure mine's cheaper than the one you bought.
Mm-hmm.
So please go to this URL, and if you want to, just check out right there. Have your credit card handy.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out.
Exactly.
It's too easy. Data is the nucleus of the way property gets purchased and sold in the 21st century. And if you're not a part of it, well, you are a part of it. If you've ever been on the MLS or on Redfin or Realtor.com looking at areas, that's all data-driven.
Mm-hmm.
The MLS is data-driven now.
Yep.
It's just, you know, if you want the inside track, here's the deal. If you send out 300 letters for land in any given market and you do it correctly, and the first time you do it, you probably won't do it correctly because it takes some practice.
Right.
You're going to buy a piece of property. You're going to buy a piece of land that is worth half, probably, of what you can sell it for that day.
Yep.
With houses, it's closer to 3,000.
Right.
It's 2,500 for us. It's a lot less, but we're finding with some of our beta members, it's 2,500 to 3,000 to buy a house. So it costs maybe, I don't know, about $1,000 to do that, a little bit more in data and in mail to buy a property that you can, in the house case, sell for $20,000 to $30,000 more immediately without sweeping the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So, at the risk of being redundant and boring you,
uh-huh.
data is better than driving for dollars. It's better than scouring the MLS. It's better than putting up bandit signs. It's better than cold calling. I mean, what are some of the other things I've heard people do that, or that you've heard people do that are just
calling their neighbors? I mean,
using a broker.
You know what they're doing? Well, they go to their broker. They go and they're like using their neighbors. That's like they walk around like with their ear to the ground, you know, listening for anybody that mentions the word so and so's moving or they want to sell. And I'm like, God, I mean, just like talk about chasing deals. It's just kind of like what a time drain. You know, that's the whole thing.
And it's just you're setting yourself for failure.
That's true, too.
That's my real concern. How many people get turned off to real estate investing in general that are totally viable candidates for this to be their career? And somebody said, you should drive for dollars at least 8 hours a day.
Right.
And you do it for a week, and you're like, nothing happened.
Okay, here's my question. My big question is, why is this so hard for people to grasp? Are they afraid of it? Do they not understand it? Does the word data, like, just make them want to run?
Yep.
Okay.
That's the answer.
Okay.
I think there's people where you say, there's a lot of math involved in this. And I think they just say, they turn off right there because they didn't have a good experience with math. So if you're not good at math and you're really uncomfortable in a spreadsheet and you love people and psychology, this is not for you. Find another podcast.
I would say, or get a partner. I don't think that's crazy, Jack. Get a partner who is.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you can't do it.
Yeah. Or if you're like if you're a couple and you want to invest in stuff and if somebody's real technical and somebody wants to talk on the phone all the time, that'll work.
Exactly.
That's pretty much us.
I just find a partner. We just had two brothers join us last weekend, you know, and I love when there's a duo like that.
Yeah.
I think that's the best. Honestly, yep. That's you stand the best chance of succeeding. You have someone else to share the workload. One of you is going to definitely be good at better at one thing than the other person.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
So, well said, actually.
Thank you very much.
Join us tomorrow for another interesting episode of the Land Investors Show. It's called How Market Data Removes the Risk Entirely or Almost Entirely in Real Estate Acquisitions Specifically.
And we answer your questions, should you have one. Post it on our online community, landinvestors.com. It's free.
You are not alone in your real estate ambition.
I loved your comment before the show. I have to say this. It was really good. You said, look, Jill, you're not the only one that can be inspirational. Or like, I can be inspirational, too. I thought that was really good. You're right. You are right, Stephen.
For the vast majority of my life before I met you, I had to do it all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, I don't.
Thank you.
But I can turn on the sales, not sales, but I can turn on the what's possible.
Yeah.
And not be a curmudgeon once in a while. It got me this far. Wherever that is.
You got me.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go. You turned it on a little bit there. Hey, share the fun by subscribing on iTunes or wherever you're listening. And while you're at it, please rate us there.
We are Steve and Jill. Information
and inspiration
to buy undervalued property.